know many ARSC members who are ever helpful in their various areas of expertise. So her presentation today is going to show another data gathering computer program, and I think this is a wonderful way to end this morning's session. Susan?
I think we're all done talking about cataloging and OCLC, and we're going to talk about Balabase. And if that sounds suspiciously like fish stew, I know it's lunchtime. We won't take a lot of time this morning. Balabase is an acronym for BALA, is Balfour Audio Laboratory and Archive. And it's a database program that we have devised for documenting and labeling information from original source recordings as they are put onto a tape. One of the most important and widespread functions of sound archives everywhere today is the preservation of fragile, old, damaged, aging recordings, which if they're not already damaged and unplayable, are in an assortment of formats that are difficult to play even in the best equipped places, and they're in danger of further deterioration if they're played at all. So preservation of these materials means re-recording onto tape at present, open reel, or occasionally those cassettes. And furthermore, we need to have accessibility to these tapes because they are the format that we will use over and over again when we have requests for them. In addition to making the copies and labeling them, indexing should take place to account for the existence, the location, and the availability of these materials. Many of them are of interest to other people besides the institution that owns them. The borrowing and exchanging goes on, and one omission in current tape transfer practices in most institutions is the standardization and documentation of this work. And so to promote consistency and authenticity in listening to these re-recordings, certain playback parameters need to be documented in the re-recording process so that they're available to the listener. Establishing universal standards for archival re-recording and playback has long been one of the primary goals at the Balfour Audio Lab. These archival standards include the types of loudspeakers, the types of tape, the extent of treatment of the original sound, that is, equalization and filtering and cleaning, and other documentation of how the re-recording was done, so that when it gets played back, it's played back the same way for all the listeners, according to this standard, independent of your individual ears, no matter how highly trained. And this report is concerned with the method of documentation, the database program, which we have developed to document the information during re-recording. And I'd like to point out here that this program is going to be useful not only to institutions, but to individual collectors who do taping of their collections. The NEH-funded preservation project, which was just completed by AAA last fall, reviewed this computerized program, and it was developed because we needed efficient retrieval and indexing and labeling of the archival types of recordings that we do. We compiled it from data checklists, which we got from New York Public, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and our own materials and our own needs. In the final report, the AAA concluded that most members' tape transfers don't carry complete, adequate, or even any documentation at all. And they recommended, in part, in this report, that the Balfour label program format be studied further as a prototype for future use on a widespread basis. With the increased use of PC-compatible computers in institutions, and I might add, with private collectors as well, it seemed feasible and efficient to construct a program for use on these computers, not only to collect the data at the time of the re-recording, but to print out a label for the tape box so that The tape is immediately identified, the contents are identified, the processing is identified, and the tape has all of the data that you will need in the future to play it back. A number of considerations affected the planning of the program, the many formats of the original sources and the re-recordings, the classes of data available or unavailable on the original source. You know, sometimes when you have acetate discs, particularly in our collections, there's usually a limited amount of information about the recording. So we had to write a program that would provide a place for as much information as we might expect to find, and we set up fields for this. We also provide in the program for a way to fill a field with an NA indication if there's no data, because if you don't fill in a field, you cannot go on to the next screen, and I will show you screens shortly. We need the program to be friendly and usable so that users are prompted to collect all the data that's needed from the original, to put in all the processing information as they go along. They don't have to be computer experts. Very often the person who is putting this information to the computer, at least in our experience, is the same person who's making the recording. So the more efficient and simplified it is, the better off we are in trying to get as much data together immediately at the re-recording stage. The program and the data are on floppy disks at the present time, and we also have the program on a hard disk on a PCAT in our own building. It can be easily loaded onto a disk drive, and you don't need to know anything. We use DBase 3 Plus to develop this, but you don't need to have DBase 3. You don't need to know anything about programming. This all is contained in the package and is very easy for someone to just pick up and use. We're now going to look at the screens, which you would see if you were to start using this program. This is the menu that comes up first. Is it in focus? Pardon me? The choices, anyway, I will read them to you, are append, browse, edit, print, quit, change, and timer. These are all the choices that you have in using the program. For adding new data records in an ongoing recording operation, the append mode is chosen. This brings up screens of blanks to be filled in as the work progresses, and I'm not going to show you blanks. I'll be showing you filled in screens in a little while. There's also a feature which is scheduled for a refinement, and it's not in this presentation today. Basically, at the point of selecting append, the user will be asked which of two procedures is being started, filling in a blank screen with a completely new performance with information on a new event, or for making several continuous tapes of an event. You have a 3 or 4 hour program and it's going to fill 2 or 3 reels of tape or more. This will have a copying function so that for reel number 1 you fill in title, performer, etc., etc. When you're done with that and you continue on to reel 2, you can tell the computer to fill in the screens for the next computer record with certain information, certain fields, which will not change from one tape to the next in this series. And then the only thing that gets changed would be the reel number, the runtime, things like that. That would be different for the subsequent reels. The browse mode will let you look through a listing of data records that are already in the computer. For instance, if you want to see how many reels of a particular event that you have, it asks you which file number you wish to start with. And then it gives you a 27-line screen, and starting with the number which you gave it, it will list all of the file numbers to the left, then an accession number or some other identifier of the original source, a title, a fairly brief title, I might say, but this will identify the material, and on the right-hand side, the location on our shelf, and those numbers on the right are what we call our reference tape numbers. That's how we identify the tapes that we make in our facility. The edit mode is useful if you want to add more information to a catalog at a later date, or if you have to make corrections. You have to call it up by file number at this time. A friendly retrieval capability is going to become part of the program in its finished form so that you can retrieve by title or composer or numbers, whatever information you have to begin with to retrieve. There are 9 screens that are filled in per record in the course of doing this re-recording. The first set of screens apply to the original source, and the second set are for the new tape copy. This is the first screen of the original source information. And I think maybe you can't read the white on blue printing as well as on the red. It gives the shelf location, the siglum of the institution, this wouldn't apply to private collectors necessarily, a project number, which is something that we often need a field for, title, performer, composer, author or lyricist. The dates, if dates are available on these, if we can research that, there's a space for that. The label name, the label number, matrix number, and keyword subject and annotation fields are at the bottom of this page. And these are the place where we would put words that would give a searcher an idea of the subject matter of the recording. It's not like Library of Congress subject headings strictly, but it's that sort of a subject access that we could also search. The second screen is the description of the original medium. You have a choice of disc, cylinder, cartridge, film, roll, cassette, tape, reel, wire, or other. And there's a box over on the right, and there's a letter code for each of these choices, and the operator fills in the box with that appropriate choice. The second item here is the status, whether it's an original or a reproduction or facsimile or whatever. The third choice is for type of recording, mass-produced, instantaneous, disc master, stamper, mother, master tape, tape duplicating master, test, NA, unknown, and other. Dimensions is the diameter of the disc, the dimensions of the cylinder, the width of the tape, whatever measurements of the original recording. When that is filled in, the program allows you to go to the next screen. They ask how this was recorded, whether it's electrical stereo analog, electrical mono analog, electrical quad analog, electrical other analog, digital stereo analog, digital mono analog, so forth, acoustic and unknown. So you have all of those possibilities for the original source. The speed is number 6 actually in this screen, the speed of the recording playback. Material, which is the surface material of the recording. The cutting type, vertical, lateral, unknown. And the groove size, micro groove, coarse, standard, the choices that are given here. The fourth screen is if it's a tape, the tape format, full track, half track, quarter track, 8-track, 12-track, 16-track, NA or unknown. Tape width, we all know the varieties of tape width. Reproduction type, NAB standard, CCIR standard, Dolby B, DBX digital, Dolby A, Dolby C, CX encoded, NA, whatever applies. and the condition of this original recording, and that's often important to know as well, because if you're playing back something that's never been played before, that's good. If you have something that's moldy or cracked or acetate is peeling, it's going to be more difficult, and it's good to make a note of the record condition, and there's also a small field at the bottom of the screen for any notes related to these particular kinds of information. The next screen is a summary of the first four screens I've just showed you, so that it gets all of that information pulled together into one screen.
With the yes, no
at the
authentication.
Pardon me?
Is that a yes, no authentication text?
At the bottom of the screen, it asks you, that's right, if the choices above are correct.
If you say no, it's not correct.
Well, it's a good way to review all of the screens at once.
Susan, if it's not correct at this point, do you immediately go into that screen and change an item?
Yes, you can go back and move the cursor around and enter the correct information. Now, to begin with the information about the re-recording, the new tape that you're making, there is a place to put in the today's date for the day you're working, the engineer's initials, the playback curve, the size of the stylus, the cartridge or reproducer that was used, any equalization or filtering, the type of equalization and filtering, and the playback speed. Information about this tape that you're making includes the number, if you have a numbering system for the tapes you make, which we do, the running time, the reel number, if it's a set of reels, reel 1 of 5, 2 of 5, and so forth. The type of recording, if this is a master, or if it's going to be a service copy, or an exchange copy, or whatever. The medium, whether it's a reel or a cassette. The tape width, the tape format, track format. And the third screen on the new tape asks for the tape speed, reproduction type, NAB, CCIR, and so forth. The diameter of the reel, and the brand of tape you're using. And there's also a field at the bottom of this for notes, technical notes on this process as well. And as we had with the first four screens, we have a summary screen for the processing tape information. And at the bottom of this screen, it asks if you've checked and if all of these entries are correct. Now that first set of screens was for a 45 RPM record that we have in a display case. That was a kind of a test entry. The engineer that did the programming used that to test the entries. This next set of screens I'll go through a little more quickly. This is material that's been entered into the computer in the process of our doing a preservation program for New York State. And this is for tapes that we got for the Franz Waxman collection, which is at Syracuse University. So there's some different entries, there's some different information or lack of information on these screens because this was a tape. But it's the same program, and it applies to whatever your re-recording or your original source, I'm sorry, is. There's the summary screen again. And the screens for the technical processing of the tape copy and the summary. The print mode sets up and prints a label for the tape box using the information which you have fed into these screens. This is the main goal of this program, setting up this label and collecting this information so that whoever plays it back knows exactly what they've got and exactly how to play it back. It puts all the selections for one reel onto one label, and at the top of the screen, the slides for this did not come out. I have a handout. Bill Storm will have it when the lights come up. And anyone who's interested in a close look at the tape label, you may have a copy of the printout. Our name is at the top. There's a heading at the top. And below that are the entries for each selection on the tape. And at the bottom is a key, which gives you the information for all of the processing data that is in with each of the selections on the tape. The label prints out to fit either a 7-inch or a 10.5-inch box, and the box size is the selection choice that you make at the time that you're printing. In the event that a change needs to be made in the program, we provided ourselves with a change choice here. And it gives 8 areas where changes are made: the program drive, the program path, data drive, data path, new disk, backup, color, save, and quit. And those of you who do programming in PCs will understand this. You don't need to know this, because once you acquired this program and were using it, it would probably stay the way it is. But we needed to have a feature where we can adapt it until it's in the best possible form. The timer feature was put in this to allow the engineer to establish running time for a selection. And it's done simply by pressing the Enter key once. And you can see faintly the box at the bottom of the screen has clock start time. It gives you hours, minutes, and seconds. And then after you're at the point where the recording ends, you push Enter again. You push it twice, in fact. And it gives you elapsed time at the bottom, the clock stop time and your elapsed time. It figures it out for you. And that's very helpful, too, if you're working alone doing this inputting plus the re-recording. The quit mode is, of course, how we get out of the program and we're all done. The program asks the user at the bottom of the screen if quit is what you really want, just in case you've hit a button by mistake, which is, I don't know about you, but I do it a lot, and this is the sort of thing that helps people like me to get along with the computer so you don't have a mistaken exit. The program has already been refined several times at our facility in an effort to accommodate all of the information that potentially would be needed and would be used by an institution or an individual. It's been in use since last September. We've tested it, as I said, in the course of doing this New York State preservation project, because that gave us a lot of information to put into it. If you look over the AAA report, in there's a note that Morgan Cundiff had evaluated it in conjunction with that project and determined that this format and text are not presently compatible to use with the ISBD punctuation. And that remains for AAA and us to work out, I suppose. The projected use ultimately for us is to have all of our reference tapes in this program, so that even retroactively, I hope, someday, time permitting. I'd like to stress that, again, that this works without having DBase. This comes already to roll and ready to print out if you have a printer. It doesn't have the retrieval capability right now. I can't show you that. But we're going to use a retrieval package. Relational Report Writer is the particular one we have. There are others as well. And then we will incorporate this retrieval capability into the program. We intend to have this in its final form distributable at cost, and not only to institutions but to private collectors, because it's an efficient and simple way to, I think, collect all of the information that's important when you're making tapes of your collection, when you're exchanging tapes with other collectors and other institutions. And this will announce it and have it available, I don't know when, for you to use. And there's the last quit screen. And that's,
quit.
I quit.
So that key automatically is printed on the bottom of every single label that's printed out.
The technical question is, do you have any idea at this point what the cost will be to us to acquire this?
No idea. Bill?
I would think it'd be very, very little, comparatively, I'm hoping, buy this for less than you buy a game for one of your kids. The idea is widespread dissemination, or more widely disseminated, more likely it is to be a standard. And I think that's more important than collecting money.
Steve?
How much space does each record occupy in memory?
I honestly don't know the answer. I didn't follow it.
For a PC, this didn't come up during the earlier discussions either. It means how many records can you put in before it says no more on stuff?
Well, it's saved to disk constantly, so you can just keep putting in disks.
Yeah, but that's how many disks, so you're going to have to keep juggling.
Well, I'm assuming you would have a hard disk at some point.
Yeah.
That's the ideal.
And also, there's a limitation.
Even that could not sell.
I don't know the answer.
That would be a big collection.
Of this as a standard, converse that at that point.